It's week 11. Do you know what your coverage is? Well, we've got your coverage right here. I'm Kyle, the scene of the game, and to my right, my always loyal co-host, Weasel, bringing the heat. Isn't that right, son?
Word.
Anyways, let's go ahead and head over to the first week of our 9-game docket this week. No more bye weeks, no double features, just straight up football. But I know what you're thinking. You're like, Kyle, I have this strange feeling that you're going to talk about a really crappy team. Yes, we're going to talk about the Browns, but crappy is not the proper adjective unless, well, we're talking about the defense of both teams involved. Something rivaling the previous matchups between the Browns and the Bengals back when the Bengals were horrible, these like 75 total points games, we had such a matchup in this year's Toilet Bowl as the Browns faced off against the Lions. And Weasel has it all for you. Weasel, go.
In a surprisingly high-scoring game that combined for 9 passing touchdowns between 2 young quarterbacks, the Lions beat the Browns 38-37 at Detroit from a last-second touchdown. For the Browns, Brady Quinn was 21-33, 63%, 304 yards, 4 touchdowns, no INTs, he was sacked once. I was watching something on NFL Network, and it was, I believe it was Michael Irvin, saying... No, it was Deion Sanders saying, "Pay the man!" And it was like, have you watched the rest of the season?
Yeah, right, really? here's my whole thing. If I could actually be confused when you said 9 touchdowns and wonder, good God, has he actually completed 9 passes in, like, all season? You know, I'm just saying, you know, how you going to pay him there? Straight cash there, homie? What? Anyways, moving on.
The receiving game, rookie wide receiver Muhammad Masaki had 5...
Masakor.
Trying to say it fast. So
Masaki. He's not Japanese.
Ah, Masaki.
Oh, Masaki-san. Oh, you will read team and receiving odds once again. Oh. Anyways.
5 catches. 115 yards. 23 yards per reception with a touchdown.
Does that mean he's a lucky? Anyways.
Chancey Stuckey had 5 for 76. 15.2 average with a touchdown. Joshua Cribbs had 2 for 39. 19.5 average with a touchdown. Rookie running back Chris Jennings had 5 for 38, while tight end Michael Gaines had 2 catches for 5 yards, one of which was for a touchdown.
Word.
The running game, Jamal Lewis had 24 rushes for 75 yards, 3.1 average. Chris Jennings had 10 for 36, 3.6 average. Joshua Cribbs had 4 for 16.
Which, making a return after that lethal hit he got, everyone says it was dirty and illegal. Dirty, maybe, illegal, no. But the fact that he bounced back like that is really the first concussion case that we know of off the bat, where people came back the very next week, and we were documenting Brian Westbrook, and I forget who the other one is right off the bat. But Cribbs coming back the next week is, needless to say, good news. Right.
For the Lions, rookie quarterback Matthew Stafford, 26 of 43, 60%, 422 yards, 5 touchdowns, 2 INTs. He sacked once, but he did have an intentional grounding penalty in the end zone that resulted in a safety in the third quarter. The receiving game, Calvin Megatron Johnson.
I don't get that.
I don't know, but I think it's funny.
Okay, yeah, you're going to have to find that for me, okay? Because you also thought that calling Adrian Peterson George Peterson or whatever. Peterson! This is George Peterson!
I think both of them are from NFL Network.
Yeah, and neither of them didn't make any sense until I had to have it explained to me.
Yes.
So I'll be looking for the Megatron explanation. Is it because his helmet is silver? I don't know.
I don't know.
Anyway.
7 catches, 161 yards, 23 yards per reception with a touchdown. Kevin Smith had 4 for 104, 26 yards per reception, touchdown. Rookie tight end Brandon Pettigrew had 6 for 72 with a touchdown. Rookie running back Aaron Brown had a 26-yard touchdown reception, while tight end Will Heller had 2 receptions for 12 yards and a touchdown. In the running game, Kevin Smith had 12 rushes for 45 yards, 3.8 average. Matthew Stafford had 3 scrambles for 7 yards. Now, usually, I think these games are blowouts and such, so we don't really talk about them.
That involve the Browns, right? We're usually done by
not
now.
Not so much this game.
Not so much. You mentioned the final score.
Yeah.
3-point difference, and they're both, scoring 1-point difference, excuse me, and they're scoring, what is that, 75 combined points?
There you go. Down 37-31 with no timeouts remaining, the Lions got the ball at their own 12-yard line with only 1:46 left in the game. Stafford led his team downfield to the Cleveland 32-yard line with only 8 seconds left. In that play, scrambled Stafford scrambled around the field and launched a Hail Mary into the end zone that was intercepted. But Browns defensive back Hank Petit was called for pass interference.
Which basically should have been raping the end zone.
Yeah.
And I don't mean the actual field of play, but the way this guy hit a receiver. Granted, he wasn't even in on the play, but he can't do that.
Well, Petit was pushing Lions wide receiver Brian Johnson out of the end zone, even when the ball was up in the air, with the reasoning that since Stafford went outside the pocket, I think when a quarterback is outside the pocket, you're allowed to have some contact downfield, because the idea is that he can run the ball.
But being outside the pocket does not replace taking one out to dinner for touching them like that.
Well, I think the problem was he could have. I think when he's outside the pocket, I think that's when the wide receivers, could jam him out of the end zone. But I think what happened was that the ball's up in the air, flying towards the end zone, and he's still doing it. He didn't look back.
There's a difference between contact and jamming. Hand checking one another, kind of like basketball, is one thing. Straight up going with the ball in the air in the end zone is completely different. Another, I think it was a great call,
and I'm sure he could have came back for the catch, as in if he was out in the back of the end zone, which he was, he could have ran back for the ball. So.
Well, right. If he was along the back of the end zone inbounds, he could have come back for the ball, sure.
Now, after launching the Hail Mary, Stafford got booyahed into the turf by Browns defensive tackle
Cameron Lindley. There was your guy right there. Yes, it certainly was, sir.
It wasn't C.J. Mosley?
It was not C.J. Mosley. It was Cameron Lindley.
Huh. All right, I may have to look that up later. And it looks like he injured his left shoulder. I think they were thinking he broke his collarbone. But I don't think X-rays, I don't think, have come back to talk about that. So he was calling for number 11. I think he was flashing a 1-1.
Yeah, he was like, you couldn't tell if it was a nervous, tense thing or...
No, it was for Culpepper.
The proper answer was both.
Yes. And Mangini took a timeout, though. Now, maybe it was to bitch at the officials, but he said after the game, it was so that his defense could get set. Anyway, you look at it, it allowed Stafford time to get back in the game and be the hero, throwing a one-yard strike to the other rookie, Tayden Brandon Pettigrew, for the game-winning touchdown. So.
Okay, so let me get this straight. You've just essentially blamed the loss on Mangini.
No, I didn't. I was thinking about it. I was like, it's easy to look back afterwards and say, oh, he took the timeout allowing Stafford to get in, but I guess he had some reasoning to get his defense set to give up the game-winning touchdown.
Well, not to mention, first of all, if you look at his D-line, made up of a lot of fat dudes, okay? Get him some win. I get that.
Yeah.
I also get the concept of arguing for the next one, though I think he was doing that a little too fashionably.
Yeah.
But to say that he called a timeout to allow a rookie who had a bad shoulder back onto the field for a chance to throw the ball, I'll take that timeout every damn time over the veteran who could be a double threat. Now, granted, Culpepper isn't the greatest quarterback ever, obviously. He had the good performance in 2004. We have to keep bringing up just because, by mandate of the Vikings fan who's sitting here. But in the red zone, I always thought him to be pretty talented right on the doorstep like that, because long before Tim Tebow was on anybody's mind, Culpepper was doing the "I'm gonna run psych, it's a pass" move. Weasel will account for that,
yeah,
I'm sure.
Yeah.
But it's a double threat concept on the doorstep like that that I thought would have been very interesting to see that single play with Culpepper. But as it turned out, Stafford, at least that game, earned that whole first round draft pick thing, and the Browns, well, they got owned.
I'll say that if Stafford does get, I would say, about 3 or 4 more wins, and he's a big cause of it, he maybe can get a Rookie of the Year over Percy Harvin.
Okay, so let's get this straight. It's week 11 we just finished.
Uh-huh.
So they got 6 more weeks.
Yeah.
And if in half those games, he's a stud.
If he beats some teams. It has to be decent teams, though. It can't be always the Browns.
Well, there you go.
So,
speaking of teams who play like the Browns, I would submit to you the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Now, in their defense, they played a much tougher Saints team who remained undefeated after crushing them, or wrecking the ship if you want to use the cheesy scenario, 38-7. Josh Freeman had a decent game, if you look only at his stats. 17 for 33, 52%, 126 yards with a touchdown. If you look at his turnovers, not so much. 3 picks and a lost fumble. Good God. Drew Brees went 19 of 29, 66%, only 187 yards, a big 3 touchdowns. On the ground for the Bucks, Cadillac Williams had 11 carries for 32 yards at about 2.9 a carry, and Ernest Graham had 3 carries for 31 yards. I wonder for a while why they haven't been going to Ernest Graham as much. If he got hurt, I didn't hear about him, and if that isn't the case, I do apologize for not doing my job right, but, you know, there's been a severe lack of the man they used to call Mr. August there, but anyways, we'll leave that at that. Also, Josh Freeman had 2 carries of his own for an extra 30 yards, and Derek Ward had 7 carries for 26 yards, 3.7 a carry. So right here we see the example of the committee which drives every fantasy football player up the wall. For the Saints, we had Pierre Thomas, who had 11 carries for 92 yards, about 9 yards a carry. And then Mike Bell had 13 carries for 75 yards with 2 touchdowns, just over 4 yards a carry. In the air, the shining moments for the Bucks came in the form of, I was about ready to call him Antonio Bryant. Antonio Bryant didn't catch the touchdown. Antonio Bryant went 5 catches for 40 yards, but Michael Clayton had a single catch for 18 yards and a touchdown, arguably one of the best, if not the best, plays I've seen all season so far. It was a very solid play. It was something where Freeman made some excellent moves to evade 2 defenders, put a nice throw right on the pins and needles, where Clayton made a beautiful over-the-shoulder back catch, post both the feet right in the corner of the end zone. A very precise play. Fortunately, after all that, went straight to Hades for Mr. Freeman there. Anyways, the shining moments for the Saints was Marquise Colson with 5 catches for 74 yards. David Thomas, no, nothing to do with Wendy's. Can we please stop making the Wendy's joke? He is a tight end. Who's apparently in addition to Shockey, obviously, 4 catches for 66 yards and a touchdown. And Robert Meacham, 2 catches, 10 yards, 2 touchdowns on the day. Look, folks, it's very simple. I have to be honest, I shirked that game for one reason and one reason alone. When your quarterback is giving up 4 turnovers to a team that has none, you will lose the game, period. Speaking of teams that lost a game, I mean, how many of those are we going to have?
Yeah, that's hilarious.
Yeah. I had a John Madden moment there. Yeah. Kind of noticed that?
Yeah.
Why don't you just give away who the next team is? Wait, actually, with that tone, it could be the Vikings or another team. Weasel, who was it?
The Chiefs pulled off an overtime victory at home, defeating the Steelers 27-24. Chiefs returner Jamaal Charles returned the opening kickoff, 97 yards for a touchdown. So to start the game, Steelers down 7-6.
And what have we been talking about for how many years now?
Steelers
special teams fail. Yeah. Exactly.
Given up 4 so far this year.
And game changes all of them.
Yeah. Yep. Big Ben Roethlisberger was 32-42, 76%, 398 yards, 3 touchdowns, 2 INTs. One was a red zone INT. He was sacked 3 times. He was injured in overtime, and in came Batch. More on that later. In our same game, Hines Ward, 10 catches for 128 yards, 4.8 yards per reception with a touchdown. Then in Heath Miller, 7 for 95, 13.6 average with a touchdown. St. Colonial Holmes had 7 for 86. Rookie wide receiver Mike Wallace lost the fumble, but had 2 for 47. And Rashard Mendenhall had 4 for 36 with a touchdown. In the running game, Rashard Mendenhall had 21 rushes for 80 yards, 3.8 average. Billy Parker had 6 for 24, 4 yards per attempt. The passing game for the Chiefs. In the first half, Matt Castle was shut down with 4 completions for only 35 yards.
That got you $90 million.
He ended up being 15 of 30, 50%, 248 yards, 2 touchdowns, no INTs, sacked 5 times, lost a fumble.
Wait, he has my $90 million.
And the guy, he's come out of nowhere. He's pretty much a midseason pickup for the Chiefs, Chris Chambers.
Hold on. He came out of nowhere because Phillip the Fraud didn't know what he had, because the Chargers didn't know what they had. This is the same team that thought it was a good idea to trade away Michael the Burner Turner in favor of Darren Sproles. Not that Darren Sproles isn't a good player, but, and we'll leave that at that. Moving on.
Chris Chambers, 4 catches, 119 yards, 29.8 yards per reception. Lance Long, 2 for 37. Tight end Leonard Pope, 2 for 26 with a touchdown. Jamaal Charles had 2 for 8 with a touchdown. In the running game, Jamaal Charles, 17 rushes, 58 yards, 3.4 yards per attempt. And Cassell tied the game up at 24 all with a touchdown pass to Jamaal Charles with 5 minutes left in the game. Both teams were unable to score in their following drives, so the game was sent into overtime. Steelers got the ball first and was driving until Big Ben got sacked on a 2nd and 3 at midfield. Big Ben got a helmet to the knee to the head and had to leave the game due to a possible concussion. Batch went in and was 1 of 2 for 17 yards. The team had to punt at the Kansas City 38-yard line. I thought they should have tried for the field goal. That would have been about a 55-yarder or so, right?
Where'd you say they punted from again?
The Kansas City 38.
So the Kansas City 38 is indeed a 55-yarder.
About a 55-yarder. Now, I guess, they put trust in the defense. The Chiefs got a huge play from Chris Chambers, a 61-yarder that put the Chiefs well into field goal range, and Mr. Irrelevant of this past year's draft.
For those who don't know who that is, that's the final pick of the final round in the draft overall.
Yes, last pick. Ryan Succop kicked the game-winning field goal to win the game.
There you go. First of all, really quick, I looked it up while you were talking about the Steelers there. C.J. Mosley was indeed the one who booyahed Mr. Stafford to begin the injury, so there you go. But getting back on track here, Steelers losing to the Chiefs. What happened? I mean, give me something, anything.
Big Ben, you never hear it from anyone. Yeah, his turnover, he did have that big turnover in the red zone.
I'm sorry, where was it?
Red zone.
Oh, okay.
And special teams, that's always going to, it's always going to matter.
And there were a number of turnovers, too, that involved. I don't know if you got the turnover ratio.
It would be 3 for the Steelers.
Yeah, compared to the Chiefs 1 with that fumble by Castle. So, basically, you can claim the Steelers lost it, but the Chiefs, finally came out with a decent performance. And something I need to correct, when I say Ben throws interceptions in the red zone, he may not, the snap of the ball may not be inside the 20, but when the ball is caught by the defender, it's in the red zone or in the end zone.
Yeah.
And if it's not, except for one or two times I've seen all season, it's taken back for 6.
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes a combination of it.
That one, INT was actually in the end zone, and it was returned to the 8-yard line, so... the other 8-yard line, and they only got a field goal off of it. So.
Oh, well, that makes it A-okay.
Yeah, whatever.
Because that whole differential between the games and, going to overtime was 3 points.
Yeah.
Anyways, speaking of other games that came out pretty close, the Bears faced off against the Eagles in the Sunday night matchup. Jay Cutler started once again in a game where he's playing on primetime Sunday night. Now, for everybody else who's been paying attention, you may have noticed that on primetime Sunday night, Cutler doesn't do so hot. However, he did improve his performance slightly in this game, going 24 throws to 43 completions, about 56%, 171 yards with a touchdown. Did also have an INT, but we'll talk more about that later. Donovan McNabb had a good game himself, 23 completions, 32 attempts, 72%, 244 yards with 2 touchdowns, did have 1 INT. Leading the running attack for the Bears was one Khalil Bell, a rookie out of UCLA, 4 carries, 81 yards, 20.25 a carry. That's kind of ridiculous. We took his big, he took his big carry out of there, which was a 72-yarder. He still went 3 for 9, 3 yards of carry. So he gets a student of the game seal of approval, because we do say running backs need to get at least 3 yards of carry to be adequate. Matt Forte continuing to be inadequate by that same measure, 14 carries, 3-4 yards, 2.4 carry. LaRon McCoy for the Eagles had 20 carries for 99 yards with a touchdown, did lose a fumble. And on his biggest game of the season, I guess we got to talk about Michael Vick for just a moment. He had a carry for 34 yards. In the air attack, Earl Bennett had 5 catches and 57 yards for the Bears. Greg Olsen had 6 catches and 42 yards. And then Kellen Davis had 2 catches for 17 yards with a touchdown. The Eagles' Deshaun Jackson went off the hook. 8 catches, 170 yards with a touchdown. Did lose a fumble on the 9, however. Jeremy Macklin made his contribution, though, with 6 catches for 54 yards. Tight end Brett Celek, 4 catches, 35 yards. And Jason Avant, 4 catches, 26 yards with a touchdown. Now, I haven't told you the score yet, but the reason for that is to go to this next stat. Bears, field goal kicker Robbie Gould, four kicks made out of 5 attempted. The Bears lost 20-24. Now, by my count, that's 4 scores for the Bears in field goals and a 5th with a touchdown, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Eagles only scored 3 times, but it was, or excuse me, 4 times, but it was 3 touchdowns and 1 field goal. So technically the Bears scored more times but lost the game because they kept on taking field goals. I think that's directly connected to their inability to move the ball on the ground, their third down completion percentage being 3 of 16, 18% on the night, versus the Eagles going 7 for 15, 46% on the night, basically directly connected to getting to third and mid-ranges or third and long, rather than a third and short where you can clean up and get the first down. Now the interception isn't relevant for one reason, but one reason alone. There was a chance for the Bears to win the day, possibly to 27-24. Jay Cutler drives his team down, gets into the red zone, and once again throws the game into ending interception in the end zone, killing the Bears' chance.
No, it wasn't even close to the end zone. No,
what's that?
It was more like the 50-yard line or so.
It definitely wasn't the 50-yard line.
It was.
But the point is, he killed the drive once again with a pick to end the day. Just a rough time
I think
for
it's,
him on prime time.
The main thing about that play was that I think Cutler does have a strong arm, and I think he just maybe
he relies on it too much.
He thinks that, you know, I can needle this in.
Yeah.
There's a guy right in front of Olsen on that play. Like, come on.
Yeah, and Olsen, again, has been quite quiet. Maybe he's missed that memo. I don't know, but quite quiet. Try that again. Anyways, but speaking of teams who have quietly done things, I submit to you folks the Jacksonville Jaguars. Granted, it was only the Bills. In the eyes of many, that's what they'll say. But if you look over the past scores over the number of years, most of those games, pretty close. The Jags edged them out 18-15, and quietly are 6-4.
Yeah.
If the playoffs started today, the Jags would be in. Interesting.
Well, start, but head back.
We've rapped on them for winning ugly games, but a win is a win.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they struggled against the Rams, and I forget who the other weak team was, and then they got owned by the Titans after owning them previously. So,
yeah.
You know, there's the 3 losses, right? That's not even 3. See, look what I just did. Mm-hmm. I talked about. Anyway, so the point is, quietly 6-3. Still in the playoff hunt, very much so. David Garrard had 21 for 30, 70%, 250 yards with a touchdown. Did, however, have an interception and a lost fumble. Ryan Fitzpatrick, the Harvard man, 18 completions, 31 attempts, 58%, 297 yards with a touchdown and 2 interceptions. So as I see it, frankly, he made a better contribution, except for his percentage was a little bit weaker than Garrard. Maurice Jones-Drew, the kid they call Mojo, went 25 carries for 66 yards, about 2.6 carries, did manage a touchdown. Garrard, once again, the second guy in the running game, 6 carries, 16 yards, 2.67 a carry. Fred Jackson coming back, 9 carries, 35 yards, 2.9 a carry, and Marshawn Lynch lost a fumble on his day where he had 8 carries for 18 yards. Michael Sims-Walker for the Jags had another big day, 8 catches, 91 yards with a touchdown. Tight end Mercedes Lewis had 3 catches for 70 yards, and Torrey Holt had 3 catches for 31 yards. Now, we usually hear about him a lot on the sideline and in press conferences, but not so much in games until this game. Terrell Owens, 9 catches. I said Terrell again, I'm sorry. Terrell Owens! 9 catches, 197 yards, with a touchdown. The touchdown being a 98-yarder, the longest in his career. And also, Josh Reed, 3 catches, 40 yards, had a chance for a long ball for a touchdown that was called back on a hold, unfortunately, which would have made the difference for the Bills. But nonetheless, 3 for 40 is all we can write down in the stat line. Third down completion percentage, dominating stat in this game. Jags had 9 of 15, a whopping 60%. That's one of the highest we've seen all year by a team not called the Patriots. And 3 of 11 for the Bills for 27%. The Jags also had about 13 minutes more time of possession and fewer turnovers. Always makes a difference when you have a game that's only separated by a field goal. And there you go. I believe that takes us to the Colts next, does it not?
Yeah.
And they were the face-off game of the week indeed was the Colts, as they were facing off against the Ravens. Pretty big deal. The Ravens are the existing proof, or rather, the disproving force, in the phrase, you are what your record says you are. The Ravens are better than their record, and of this I have no doubt. However, the Colts are undefeated still, dropping them 17-15. Peyton Manning at 22 carries for 31 yards, 71%, 299 yards with a touchdown and two interceptions. And then Joe Flacco, 23 completions, 35 attempts, 65%, 256 yards with an interception. On the ground, Ray Rice for the Ravens had 20 carries for 71 yards, 3.55 a carry. And Willis McGahee had 6 carries for 25 yards, about 4.1 a carry. Joseph Addai on the ground for the Colts, 19 carries, 74 yards, 3.9 a carry with a touchdown. And Donald Brown, the rookie, 4 carries for 10 yards, 2.5 a carry. Weasel's favorite Colts receiver, Pierre Garçon, catches 6 catches, 108 yards. Reggie Wayne had 7 catches for 89 yards. And the backup tight end, Tom Santee, had 6 catches for 80 yards. He did, however, lose a fumble right on the goal line by way of one Ray Lewis. It would be made up for in the game where Joseph Addai juked Ray Lewis out of his shoes to get a touchdown. But the only receiving touchdown on the day? Yeah, it's Dallas Clark! Yeah, sure, the stat line says one catch for 3 yards, but that catch was what I'm going to heretofore refer to as a platter catch, because he had his hand out, and he caught it one-handed, and he held it up as if, sir, yes, Mr. Referee, I just called a touchdown. Would you like a drink? And, like, the ball would be in his hand like it was on a tray.
It was like a, I think it was just a hand, that's all.
Yeah, well, balls, sir. So, yeah, that made the that definitely made the defense there. And then going to the air game for the Ravens, Derek Mason had 9 catches for 142 yards. Good contribution there. And Ray Rice, once again, continuing to contribute all over the place. 7 catches, 64 yards. Looking at the third down conversion percentage, the Colts were slightly better, going 5 for 9 at 55% versus 5 for 13 at 38%. But just like we spoke of with the Bears, the Ravens' problem was the inability to hit it in the end zone. The Colts scored the Colts scored less than the Ravens did overall. Too often settling for field goals. Field goals are not going to beat the Colts, though. It's that simple. Speaking of people who did find the end zone, Weasel, go.
The Vikings improved to 9-1 with a 35-9 victory over the visiting Seahawks. Brett Favre was 22 of 25, 88%, 213 yards, 4 touchdowns, no INTs.
See how I did that touchdown transition even though you're a sellout?
Sacks-wise, Carvarius Jackson, 6 of 8, 75%, 77 yards, 1 touchdown, no INTs. In the receiving game, Sidney Rice, 6 catches, 89 yards, 14.8 average with 2 touchdowns. Rookie wide receiver Percy Harvin had 5 for 79, 15.8 average with a touchdown. Tight end Vishante Shenko, 8 for 78 with a touchdown. Bernard Berrien, 2 for 11 with a touchdown. In the running game, Adrian Peterson had 24 rushes for 82 yards, 3.4 average, and Chester Taylor had 11 for 73, 6.6 average. In the passing game of the Seahawks, Matt Hasselbeck, 19 of 26, 73%, 231 yards, no touchdowns, 1 INT. Seneca Wallace was over 3. They were each sacked once. Receiving game, Nate Burleson, 6 catches for 100 yards, 16.7 average. Justin Forsett at 8 for 80. T. C.J. Houshmandzadeh, 4 for 36. And Deion Branch had a 15-yard reception.
I do have one bone to pick with you, sir. Last week, Tavares Jackson came in the game for a bit, and Sidney Rice dropped the ball, and you called for conspiracy theory. When Tavares Jackson threw his touchdown in this game, who caught it?
It was Sidney Rice.
Theory killed. Moving on.
In the running game, Justin Forsett, 8 rushes, 9 yards, 1.1 average with a touchdown. Hasselbeck had 2 scrambles for 4 yards, while Wallace lost 9 yards on a play. Seahawks ended up 4 yards total rushing.
Woot! Woot! So yeah, I mean, you know, this is another one of those games where I was like, oh look, stats, I'm just going to drop 2. Third down completion percentage for the Vikings, 61% to the Seahawks, dreadful 10. That would be 1 conversion out of 10 attempts. And looks like about 35 and a half minutes, 34 and a half minutes, time of possession difference in favor of the Vikings.
Just a little bit significant.
Yeah.
But speaking of things that might have been just a little bit significant, a 3-point deficit, overtime, Giants winning the day versus the Falcons. Weasel, give me what you got.
The Giants, at home, snapped their 4-game losing streak by beating the Falcons 34-31 in overtime. Eli Manning was 25 of 39, 64%, 384 yards, 3 touchdowns, and 1 INT. He was sacked once. In the receiving game, Mario Manningham, 6 catches for 126 yards, 21 yards per reception. Steve Smith had 4 for 79. Tight end Kevin Boss, 5 for 76 with 2 touchdowns. Rookie wide receiver Hakeem Nicks, 5 for 65. Fullback Madison Hedgecock had 2 for 9, one of which was for a touchdown. In the running game, Brandon Jacobs, 12 rushes for 39 yards, 3.3 average with a touchdown. Ahmad Bradshaw had 12 for 34, 2.8 average. Danny Ware had 2 for 15. For the Falcons, Matt Ryan, 26 of 46, 56%. 268 yards, 2 touchdowns, no INTs. He was sacked twice, lost a fumble. In the receiving game, tight end Tony Gonzalez, 8 catches, 82 yards, 10.3 average with a touchdown. Michael Jenkins had 6 for 76. Roddy White had 4 for 45. Justin Pele.
Peel. He doesn't play soccer, huh? Former Chargers tight end who was doing a good job at the tight end and has been reduced to the number 2 spot for one reason and one reason alone, a Hall of Famer.
Yeah. 3 for 41, and Eric Weems had a 4-yard touchdown reception.
Yeah, you got that one right.
Yeah. Jason Snelling, 25 rushes for 76 yards, 3 yards per attempt with 2 touchdowns.
If I hear one more person, yes, this includes you, Rich Eisen, to say that Snelling is smelling the end zone, I'm going to punch somebody. Really? That's the best you can do?
Yeah. Matt Ryan, 5 scrambles for 14 yards, 2.8 average.
Hey, I thought of something worse. Does that mean I'm selling, snelling, smelling the end zone? Yeah, that's worse, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Okay, I feel better now. I don't have to punch your size. That's worse. All right.
The Falcons did get a late Matt Ryan touchdown pass to Tony Gonzalez with only 35 seconds left in the game to send it in overtime. But the Giants won the coin toss and took care of business by driving down the field, highlighted by a 29-yard catch by Mario Manningham to put the Giants in field goal position. A couple plays later, Lawrence Times kicked the 36-yard game-winning field goal.
So there you go. Basically, you broke down most of the important stats. The Giants struggled a bit more against the Falcons than I thought they would, but you're starting to see signs of life in the defense. And that's really the big deal. I'll check here in a moment. I think it's either next week or in 2 weeks, but they play the Cowboys very shortly, whose offense is kind of sputtering at the moment, too. So what we're looking at is a sputtering defense in the form of the Giants and a stuttering offense in the form of the Cowboys, who could only manage a touchdown against the damn Redskins. You know.
And they got, I believe, shut out against the Packers.
Shut out against the Packers?
Yeah, I think they got shut out.
No, they had one still.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, what are you talking about? They're great. Great!
Well, they looked really good the first, they were like riding high, like a 6-3 or something.
And actually, to make it clear, the Giants will be playing the Cowboys in 2 weeks, Thursday this week. your evening Thanksgiving festivities going to the Giants facing off against the Broncos. Look for a thorough Thursday article, or would that be a thorough Thanksgiving Thursday article? This is getting confusing. Can we move on?
Let's move on.
All right. The New England Patriots faced off against their division rival Jets. This game was very important to the Jets because it marked signs of life if they could actually win this game. Sadly, they didn't. 31-14, the Pats win the day. And it's not so much that the Pats lost this game, won this game. It's more in the way the Jets lost it. Shaking the franchise to its very core, the Sanchez had 8 completions for 21 attempts, an abysmal 38%. Basically, he had fewer completions than there were touchdowns in that Browns game. 136 yards, did have a touchdown, but friends, 4 interceptions and a lost fumble. The Sanchez made the franchise crumble that day. However, Golden Boy Tom Brady did his usual. 28 completions for 41 attempts, 68%, 310 yards, and a touchdown. On the ground for the Patriots, Lawrence Maroney still having a little bit of a presence there. Had 22 carries for 77 yards, 3.5 a carry with 2 touchdowns. Did, however, lose a fumble. And with the weapon Walker, did have a reverse for 11 yards. On the ground, a big running contributor for the Jets, still Thomas Jones with 21 carries, 103 yards, 4.9 a carry. In the air, for the Patriots, West the Weapon Welker, 15 completions, 192 yards. Kevin Falk had 4 catches for 53 yards. And some guy named Moss, you know, Randy Moss, that's familiar. 5 catches for 34 yards, did have a touchdown on the day. The Jets receiver numbers were led by Jericho Cotri, who had 3 catches for 84 yards and a touchdown. Dustin Keller with 3 catches for 38 yards. And Braylon Edwards, who had a catch for 10 yards. Now look, I don't normally enjoy it when the alleged professional analysts on television who have allegedly played in the NFL, or no, they definitely did play in the NFL, but just it's the alleged analysis part. They'll say, you can't win if you don't go to this player. Normally that's crap. However, I think we found one rare instance where going to a player versus not has made a difference. If the Jets don't get completions to Braylon Edwards, they're going to lose. Not so much because Braylon Edwards is a big deal, because of how open he gets. The incompletions in place were the fault of the Sanchez. Mark Sanchez did not make throws that he should have. Edwards' number should have been bigger. Obviously, have a touchdown in there. Granted, if you put in only one touchdown, they still lose. But also, that's a turnover that didn't happen, yada, 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 down the line with analysis. But the point is, Braylon Edwards' involvement is a must. Looking at third down conversion percentage, 8 third down attempts out of 17, 47% for the Pats, and the Jets in an abysmal 20% going 2 for 10. The Pats had almost 20 full minutes of time of possession more on the strength of the 5 turnovers versus the only one in the coming in the form of the fumble by Maroney. What should have been a close game, what last time wasn't a close was a close game where the Jets won. I noted then that West the Weapon Welker was out and it might make a difference. 15 catches and 192 yards later in this game, he proves me right. Which is why you should look at my tweets, because, you know, I nail some stuff right before game time. I did that, something else I called correctly was Dallas Clark having a big game against the Dolphins, the Monday night game. So, username for that is TheSOTG. If you want to email us, got anything to say, we'll still take comments about midseason awards, of course, from the Week 10 show. Go ahead and email us at SOTG@thestudentofthegame.com. We're on iTunes. Just look for The Student of the Game. And you can always check out the site itself, thestudentofthegame.com. We'll be back for Week 12, Thursday. Look out for the Thorough Thursday article. Until then, I'm Kyle, The Student of the Game, or my friend and co-host, Weasel. See you Week 12, friends.